A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state. The right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad you're with me on the program today. Hopefully you had a good weekend. We're going to be talking with Mark Walters from Armed American Radio here in just a moment or two. Today is Judgment Day in Virginia. Governor Abigail Spanberger has until midnight tonight to sign bills and make some law, to veto bills, to simply sit on her hands and allow these bills to become law without her signature, or to kick these bills back to the Democrat-controlled legislature with recommended amendments. What's she going to do with all of these gun control bills that are on her desk? So far, she has signed several pieces of legislation, including the one-size-fits-all storage mandate. Basically, if you have a minor living in your home, you've got to keep that gun, any of your guns, locked up, inaccessible to those individuals unless they are being carried on your person. And in fact, that's it. Not even under your control, right? Sometimes we've seen that vague language used. But essentially, unless you're carrying that gun, it has to be locked up where a juvenile in the home cannot gain access to it. We've also seen Governor Spanberger sign a bill that would make it easier to sue gun makers, distributors, retailers for the actions of criminals. This is a way to get around, or an attempt anyway, to get around the Protection of Lawful Commerce and Arms Act by talking about a public nuisance created by vague and undefined, unsafe practices, basically. So they're not going to tell you what you have to do in order to stay on the right side of the law, because that's not the point. The point is to actually just, again, make it as easy as possible to sue members of the firearms industry. But she is still hanging on to that ban on so-called assault firearms and large-capacity magazines, which in Virginia has been arbitrarily defined as 15 rounds, anything over 15 rounds. It was going to be defined as 10, and then they said, well, let's make it a little bit more lawsuit-proof. We'll make it 15 rounds instead. Still covers plenty of commonly owned magazines, and the ban on so-called assault firearms is also a prohibition on the manufacture, sale, and transfer of some of the most popular firearms in the country. So what is Governor Spanberger going to do here? Now, remember, we've got a special election coming up April 21st. So next Tuesday, on whether or not to allow Democrats to redraw our congressional maps in Virginia. Right now, it's, Virginia is a pretty competitive state, and the maps show that. I think it's six Democrats, five Republicans, maybe the other way around, but it's fairly closely split. Democrats want to replace that with a map that gives them a 10-to-1 advantage in Congress. They're billing this as a way to fight back against the MAGA power grab. They're on the airwaves with Barack Obama. It's hard to ignore the ads from Barack Obama, frankly. They're just blanketing all of the streaming services. I got to tell you, I've seen I've not seen a single pro redistricting sign where I live, down near Farmville. Even on my drives over to Richmond, Virginia, I haven't seen a single sign saying vote yes. I've seen a lot of signs saying vote no. I have just recently started to see some advertising, some mailers. I've been getting texts. I hate those robo-texts, by the way. I think that is the most ineffective form of advertising. And whoever is doing that on behalf of the Vote No campaign, please stop. Spend your money elsewhere. So the Vote No campaign is out there. They are, in fact, they just got, I think it was like a $6 million donation, but they are being outspent by a magnitude of 4-5-1 over the by the pro redistricting forces. But that, again, I think is a consideration that is looming in the back of the governor's mind. It sure looks like this is going to be a very close vote. Do you want to do anything that's going to energize rural Virginians, that are going to ensure the turnout of gun owners to, as a protest vote? Or do you want to reward your friends in the gun control lobby who lavished spending on your campaign and on behalf of your campaign, and sign this bill into law or allow it to take effect without signing it? And you roll the dice on what impact that might have on next week's redistricting election. It's the choice that Governor Spanberger is going to have to make, and we kind of go through all the scenarios with Mark Walters. Take a look and a listen. Mark, thanks so much for coming on the program. It's good to see you again.
Thanks for having me, brother.
Yeah, dude, appreciate it, and I always enjoy spending time with you on the Monster Cast. So I appreciate the time last night. We were hanging out with Phil Van Cleve of the Virginia Citizens Defense League, and I guess that's where we should start. I mean, today is the deadline for Governor Abigail Spanberger, right? She can sign these bills into law. She can veto these bills. She can do nothing, and these laws will take effect anyway. Or the fourth option is she can offer amendments to one or more of these gun control bills, tell the legislature, hey, I want to see these changes, and then send it back to them, which I'm wondering, Mark, you know, she's already signed several gun control bills. The ban on so-called assault firearms and large capacity magazines is still out there on her desk. And with this redistricting vote coming up on April 21st and Democrats being pretty scared about the turnout right now, I am wondering, does she punt on the gun ban bill? She'll sign it at a later date, but does she kick it back to the legislature for, you know, the next couple of months in the hopes of keeping Spanberger signs assault weapon ban into law out of the headlines?
That's a real possibility. And after we talked last night on the Monster Cast, I put some thought into that. I was up late last night, Sundays into Mondays. It always works that way after the show. And I thought about that this morning, too, because the first time I heard about that was Phil Van Cleve. I hadn't even thought about that option. You know, I talked about, as did you, you know, what was she going to do? She's got till midnight tonight. Does she blow it off? Does she just let it become law? Didn't even think about her suggesting changes. In the face of that letter from Harmeet Dhillon, which was a threat, a direct threat, you sign this bill, because she specifically pointed to, as you know, the assault weapons ban bill in her letter specifically. And she mentioned others as well, so we'll have to wait and see on that one. But the big one is this assault firearms bill. I'm not going to be surprised if two things happen. A, she lets it become law. That gives her, in her warped CIA, twisted, I want to be president mind, some form of plausible deniability. Well, I didn't sign the bill.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, there's always that. She's definitely not going to veto the bill because she worked with the legislature to get it passed and she's praised everything that they've done. So I don't see that happening. But then on the heels of this letter, maybe some changes that she might suggest, which I would ask you, the host in me says, what changes do you think that she would propose? Because I'm going to say that's probably better than a 60% option right now. I think I could be way off on this because she's a Democrat. Trying to get in their minds is impossible to do.
Right.
But on the face of that letter from Harmeet, I would not be shocked at all to see her proposed changes. I'd like to ask you what changes she would propose.
So that's interesting because, you know, you could and really it's entirely up to her. Right. I mean, if this is purely a delaying tactic, and she's thinking more about this referendum coming up on April 21st, maybe she just offers what are essentially cosmetic changes, you know, things that don't really change the substance of this bill. Mm-hmm. If, you know, this is something that Phil Van Cleve brought up on the show last night, though, if she is also concerned about litigation and, you know, where a DOJ lawsuit, you know, might overturn this ban. You know, Phil said there's been some rumors out there that that this might be modified to what we saw in Colorado last session. Right. They started out with an outright ban. They ended up with a permit to purchase a so-called assault firearm after Governor Jared Polis said he was not going to sign a ban. They went, all right, well, what about the next best thing? You know, that, I guess, would be the most likely, you know, substantive change if she does go that route. The thing is, though, Mark, I mean, Virginia sits in the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals. Fourth Circuit has already upheld
Maryland's
right in the Snope case. Right. So, you know, it's going to be really hard to overturn an outright ban in Virginia until you get up to the Supreme Court or unless there's a challenge in state court using the language of the Virginia Constitution that, you know, would allow a judge to say, yeah, this is unconstitutional. I suspect that this, if we do see her, you know, choose this amendment route to kind of kick the can down the road, I suspect that it'll be more cosmetic than substantive in what she's calling for.
It all remains to be seen because as we're talking, today is the day.
Yeah.
I mean, right. This is it, right? There's a couple different ways to look at this. There's a couple different ways to break this down. Now, I don't know enough about her. And I, to be honest with you, and I should have done this, I haven't compared Virginia's bill against Maryland's bill. So I don't know what the comparisons are in the Fourth Circuit between those two, but she is very well aware that the Fourth Circuit has upheld Maryland's ban. She also knows there's a split. She knows the Supreme Court is looking at this, and she has to know that Kavanaugh said what he said in that letter. So does she want to risk, and because this is just going to fast track that, does she want Virginia to be responsible for the Supreme Court fast tracking this at SCOTUS because of her bill and her signature and her thumbing the nose? Now, there's a part of me that, knowing the way she plays pool, my initial thought when the threat came out from Harmeet Dhillon, which was forceful, and look, I'm going to take that as a W, okay? Yeah, there's a lot of things that Harmeet Dhillon could be doing, a lot of legitimate questions. How come you're not in Maryland? How come you're not in Rhode Island? How come you're not in Connecticut? How come you're not in Illinois doing these same things? Guys, she's got to start somewhere, okay? And this bill has yet to be enacted, so this threat was natural for her to make. I'll chalk that up as a W. I'll take that victory. There's a lot of other work that has to be done. But having said that, it was just knowing the way Spanberger operates, just looking at her face, for crying out loud. I would take her as basically a thumb my nose at you. Now I'm really going to sign this bill. I'm surprised in a sense that she didn't wake up this morning and sign it just because.
It very well could. I won't say backfire in that regard, but yeah, I mean, in Virginia politics are weird because governors cannot run for reelection. At least not consecutively. You are, one and done, basically. And so, mm-hmm. You're always eyeing that next spot. Where do you go from here, right? Spanberger could run for president in 2028. I haven't heard any rumors to that effect, but, I think it's going to be a very crowded field. So she very well could be looking at that. If she serves out her entire term, she'd be looking at, running for U.S. Senate a few years from now.
Yeah.
But I think it's fair to say that she is looking at her political future. This is not just a consideration for, and that goes for every bill that she signs, right? She is looking at building her political future. I could see her doing exactly what you said, right? All right, you want to pick a fight with me, Harmeet mm-hmm. Dhillon? Well, I'm going to go ahead and pick a fight with you, and I'm going to sign this into law. And again, maybe she does. I mean, we'll learn by midnight tonight what she has done. I suspect we'll probably know a few hours before then.
Yeah.
But it is interesting, Mark, we haven't seen the big signing ceremony in the governor's office. All of the gun control groups gathered behind Abigail Spanberger, smiling and applauding, and she hands them all a commemorative pen. Like, we haven't seen that. She's already signed several gun control bills into law. She's made this sort of anodyne announcement along with other bills that she signed. She's talking way more about, bills that are supposedly going to make life in Virginia more affordable. Bills that are, bringing jobs to Virginia. A lot of those jobs, by the way, a lot of that work started under Governor Glenn Youngkin. She has not played up the anti-gun bills that she has signed to date. So I suspect that whatever she does, she's not going to make a big deal out of it.
Yeah.
And she's got to hope that the news media in Virginia doesn't make a big deal out of it either.
Well, there is going to be a big deal made out of it. And she knows it's going to be a national referendum as well, too.
Yeah.
The way that she plays pool and the way we've seen her play pool, it's so hard to get into their heads because every single option that we're discussing right here is a plausible option. These are all legitimate things that she could do. We just don't know yet. It is kind of surprising to me because I feel certain that the gun grabber groups are screaming for that, put us behind you. We support you in the face of the attacks from the DOJ, et cetera. However, this points to another problem, too, that we haven't talked about. And that's people like to talk about term limits, right? Well, Virginia's governor is term limited. And when a governor is termed, there's nothing stopping them. Nothing. She doesn't have to worry about running for reelection. So she can do literally anything she wants to do. She doesn't care. Phil pointed out on my show last week on the Daily Defense that when it comes to Spanberger, and the decisions that she's making right now. One of the things that he pointed out to me was, Well, she hasn't done anything yet. She might not do anything yet. She's not going to veto one of these. She's definitely not going to veto the bill. However, let's not forget the fact that she was given the reins to give the response to Trump's State of the Union. So you got all this stuff going on in her mind. They don't just hand that playing card out to everybody. Right. All right. So there's clearly some political aspirations. She's looking at higher office, which, as a politician, self-centered and self-serving, that is going to be in her mind at this point regarding these bills, particularly on the heels of that threat from Harmeet Dillon. Oh, man, I want to run for president. And you bring up Polis in Colorado, a great example. Maybe she, who knows? Maybe they're talking. What should I do? I don't know. We're going to know everything today, regardless. But I think if I'm asked to bet on this, if I'm walking in a casino door in Vegas right now, I would say that she probably lets the bill go into law without signing it. That would be the probably 75 to 80% chance. And then right below that, after talking with Phil last night, having not considered it, she may make some changes to it. She's certainly not going to veto it. And I really don't believe she will sign it. But again, guesses and speculation could be way off on that. Who knows what's going through the Wicked Witch at the East End?
Absolutely. Yeah. Tim Anderson, who's a former delegate and the attorney who works a lot in the Second Amendment space in Virginia, actually said on X, I think it was last night, that he expects that that the bill will be amended, that she'll send, she'll send it back with amendments. He also said he expects her to outright veto one of these gun control bills. He didn't say which possible one. If she does do that, I mean, there's a bill, and I can't remember the bill number right now. You know, on the surface, it looks like it bans the open carrying of firearms, particularly these, you know, so-called assault firearms. But the way it's written, it could actually apply to transporting these guns. So I'd say if any bill is going to get vetoed, so she can appear to be, you know, pragmatic and moderate, that would be the one, you know, pointing to the language, saying, oh, there's some ambiguity here about what this actually covers. But I think you're absolutely right about, you know, and it's a good reminder that she was tapped to give President the response to President Trump's State of the Union address. You know, if Spanberger does run for president 2 years from now, it's going to be as a moderate, right? She's going to be kind of in Andy Beshear's lane, the governor of Kentucky, right? And, you know, Beshear, as governor of Kentucky, has allowed a lot of laws to go into effect without vetoing them until this session. All of a sudden, now he starts vetoing pro-gun legislation, even though it takes a bare minimum majority to override his veto in Kentucky. So it's a, you know, that's virtue signaling to the Democrat base that, hey, as moderate as I might be, I'm with you on gun control. So it's going to be interesting to see the calculations that Spanberger makes. And like you say, we'll know by midnight tonight what's going to happen with all of these bills. But and we know that I think regardless of what she does with the assault ban or the assault firearm ban, I hope the DOJ litigates on some of these other bills that have already been signed or that will become law starting July the 1st.
I think they will. And, you know, I'm sitting here chuckling because you're right. She would try to run as a moderate, but that ship has sailed. And I'm actually shocked that Cam Edwards at Cam and Company can't remember the language of the bill. You mean you're not up on all 20 gun control bills sitting on her desk, right? I mean, that's how crazy it is in Virginia. You know, I've got to pull them up and look at them myself. Even the six that I think it's six that she's already signed. And, you know, to try to suggest in any way, shape or form with a straight face that she's a moderate after this, it's impossible to do. As I said, that ship has already sailed, man. That train has left the station. It's impossible for her to do that. If she wants to do that, she would literally have to go in and veto this bill. And that'd be the assault firearms bill in the face of Harmeet Dillon's threat in that letter, then she might be able to say, see, I'm a moderate. I didn't go that far. Now, to her credit, if I'm going to give her any credit, she has not been talking about that bill. She shied away from it when she was asked questions about the bill, and she said she would simply take a look at what the legislatures have done in Virginia before she signs anything. Although we all know that she's been cheering this on. So, you know, when it comes to politicians, particularly this one, don't listen to one word they say, but watch what they do. And she's already signed six of those bills. So today is the day. And like everybody else, I'm waiting with bated breath on this one. Moderate. Can't even keep a straight face in that. Golly.
Well, either way, Mark, you've got plenty to talk about tomorrow on the agenda.
Yeah.
And I appreciate you coming on the program today, my friend. It's always good seeing you again. Thanks so much for the invite for Sunday night, and hope we get a chance to do this again very soon.
Well, we're going to, no doubt, because we're going to know a lot. I hope I have some news for people today on this by 4 o'clock. We never know. I think that threat from Dylan is exacerbating the situation in Virginia, probably likely puts it up to midnight, I think. But we'll know tomorrow for certain.
Absolutely. Thanks, Mark.
All right, Cam. Thanks for having me, brother.
My thanks to Mark for joining me on the program. Looking forward to having him back again soon. Be sure to check out the Daily Defense as well as the Sunday Night Monster Cast at Armed American Radio. Right now, let's turn our attention to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report. We will start there with a case out of Seattle, Washington. Here's the headline. Felon arrested with multiple guns, tracked with ankle monitor. Wow, how about that? An ankle monitor. And one that was actually operational. But again, why was the guy out with an ankle monitor anyway? According to KIRO in Seattle, the Seattle Police Department, and a Department of Corrections officer arrested a 20-year-old man for violating his probation and having multiple guns in the Capitol Hill neighborhood. This is a Friday night, about 10:45 in the evening. Patrol officers working with the Department of Corrections searched for an individual that they knew to be on active supervision for multiple crimes, including armed robbery. Yeah. They say the man was located in a car with three others after tracking him via his ankle monitoring device to a parking lot. Seattle Police Department says they found the suspect in the driver's seat of the car. While searching the vehicle, they found three handguns as well as cannabis paraphernalia, which I thought was mandatory, frankly, if you owned a car in Seattle. Anyway, police arrested the suspect, detained the people who were identified, and then released by officers. So you got a 20-year-old who's been convicted of armed robbery, among other offenses. And he's out of probation? I mean, what the heck, man? You would think. So this has to be, I would say the odds are that this was an offense that he committed as an adult. Because they didn't talk about him being on juvenile probation. So that means that sometime in the last 2 to 3 years, this individual was convicted of armed robbery. Let's say the other offenses that he was convicted of, because again, multiple convictions, right? He got such a minor sentence. We don't even know if he got any prison time at all. But if he did, it was such a short stint behind bars that he's already released at the tender age of 20 on probation for armed robbery and other offenses. Now, again, this is Washington State, one of many blue states around the country, where they continue to pass gun laws. They're not aimed at guys like this. They're aimed at people like you and I. Again, a ban on large capacity magazines, right? Gators Custom Guns is at the Supreme Court right now, a challenge to Washington State's ban on so-called large capacity magazines. Waiting periods. They're going after 3D printers in Washington State, or at least they did this session. All of these bills, again, not aimed at increasing the penalties for violent offenses, not meant to keep violent offenders behind bars for a longer period of time. No, they are aimed squarely at your right to keep and bear arms against, by the way, violent offenders like this guy and others who are going to get a slap on the wrist and quickly return to the streets, even while Democrat lawmakers use their crimes as an excuse to go after your rights. It is a vicious cycle, and it continues there in Washington State. Now, today's Armed Citizen story, actually an update to a story we brought you last week. In the South Derry neighborhood of Chicago, we reported on a defensive gun use that happened just a few hours prior. So we didn't have a lot of information at the time. We do have more information now, and this is a weird one. The homeowner who shot the intruder, still not facing any charges, but we now know that the intruder was actually somebody with Alzheimer's who had apparently entered the wrong home. CBS Chicago reports that the family of that man are demanding answers. And, you know, I can understand why they want more reporting on what actually happened. But based, again, on the initial police reports, it sounds like this individual did have a reasonable belief that his life was in danger. So this was a week ago, about 1:30 Monday morning. Chicago police say they responded to a report of someone who was shot in the South Erie neighborhood. When they got there, they found a man who had been shot in the chest. He was pronounced dead at the scene. He was later identified as 62-year-old Carmelo Medina of Harvey, Illinois. Police say that the 33-year-old who lives at the home said that Medina had entered their home, had charged in his direction and run towards him. And that's when he fired a gun, striking the man in the chest. Medina's sister, Estella, told CBS Chicago he was a good man. He wasn't a bad person. His son, Carmen Martinez, said he was just there for everybody. It didn't matter who it was, family, friends, just everybody. He would drop everything just to be there for them. And this is a tragedy. I think we can agree now that it is likely that Carmelo Medina did not enter that home with the thought of doing harm to people inside. That is probably likely. It does not, however, mean that Mr. Medina did not intend to do harm to the homeowner once he encountered that 33-year-old man. Medina had gone missing, as famous as early Monday morning. Now, again, the shooting happened at 1:30 Monday morning. His family says they think that Medina walked from where he stayed in Harvey, was disoriented, and went into a random home. And they say that he had gone wandering off before. Previously, they'd always been able to locate him. His niece, Ana Bahena, said he was wandering. He didn't know exactly what was going on. He didn't know. He wasn't in his right mind, basically, because he had Alzheimer's. Okay. So again, let's assume that that's correct, that he was disoriented, didn't know where he was, or maybe he thought he did know where he was. Maybe there was something about that house or that door that led Medina to think, this is where I live. He walks in, he sees somebody he doesn't recognize. Maybe he believes this is his own home. What are you doing here? At that point, the homeowner is the aggressor in Carmelo Medina's mind, right? Which would account for him charging at the homeowner. Again, we don't know for certain what was going through his mind, but regardless, he did not have the right to enter that home. And assuming that he was disoriented, I don't think it's a stretch to also assume that there is a possibility that Carmelo Medina believed that he was in his home, and that the homeowner did not belong there. That to me is not outside the realm of possibility. His son, Carmen Martinez, said, it didn't get to the point where you have to shoot somebody. We don't know that. Carmen Martinez does not know that. He wasn't in the home. I don't know that. I wasn't there. But the police who responded did not arrest the homeowner at the time. To the best of my knowledge, they have not filed any charges against the homeowner. And this is Chicago that we're talking about, by the way. So it is not unheard of for overzealous prosecutors to go after individuals who have acted in self-defense. So if they did not make an arrest at the scene, they have not levied charges in the week since this happened. My guess, again, is that the law enforcement officers investigating this case believe that the homeowner did have a reasonable belief that his life was in danger. Carmen Martinez says, the main thing we're trying to get a point is we want justice. Why do we all want that? But again, what does justice look like here? Does it look like a open and transparent accounting of the police investigation? Sure. Does it look like criminal charges being filed against the homeowner? Not necessarily. Because again, if the homeowner had a reasonable belief that his life was in danger, he had every reason to shoot the man who was in his home charging at him. Last report from the Chicago police. Again, no updates on the case. They say the investigation remains ongoing. At some point, they'll present the results of this investigation to the Cook County State's Attorney. And we will see what she does with this case. But promise you an update if we got more details. And we did. So there it is. We will continue following this defensive gun use in Chicago and bringing more details as they become available. Finally today, our good deed of the day. In the right place at the right time, willing able to do the right thing, from Savannah, Georgia, where several children were saved after a fire broke out in an apartment complex in the Georgetown neighborhood. This was pretty scary, but thankfully, again, you had really not just one good Samaritan there on the scene, but you had several individuals. Fire crews say the entire building of the Georgetown Oaks apartment complex was affected. They still don't know what happened to spark the blaze, but it broke out just before 4 o'clock Sunday morning. Firefighters who arrived there are faced with a heavy smoke and flames. Chatham County Fire Department PIO Robert Cadenese says it was determined at the time or shortly thereafter that this was going to be a two-alarm fire. Police officers were able to catch two children after their mom dropped them from a third-story balcony while trying to save them. In total, five people were rescued. Dozens of individuals have lost access to their apartment. At least 22 of the apartment's 24 units were affected by the fire. Some of them, obviously, total losses. But again, while they're piecing together what happened, they're also trying to identify somebody that they consider a hero, an individual who knocked on every door in that apartment building and yelled for neighbors to get out because of that fire. Cadenese says that that individual, again, they consider a hero. He also noted Chatham County Fire Captain John William Farrell, Chatham County Firefighter Christopher Carter Jr., who says were critical in rescuing three adults. And then again, the two police officers who helped rescue those children. None of that might have been possible were it not for that anonymous stranger, who hopefully will soon be identified, who was the Paul Revere of that apartment complex, right? Knocking on doors in the middle of the night. The firefighters are coming, but you still need to get out while you can. Don't know who that individual is. Hopefully we get more information, and hopefully they get the recognition that they deserve, as long as they're willing to accept that that acknowledgement. But we will keep you apprised if there are any more details in that story as well. All right, that has got to do it for this edition of Barron Arms Cam & Company. I want to thank you for being a part of the program as always. Looking forward to seeing you back here again tomorrow. Until then, be sure to check out BarronArms.com. We've got all of the latest Second Amendment news and information from all across the nation for you. If you like what you see, we'd also encourage you to become a VIP, VIP Gold or VIP Platinum member. Just go to BarronArms.com/subscribe. Use the promo code FIGHT. And take 60% off your membership. No matter what tier of support you choose, you'll be supporting the work we're doing at Barron Arms. There's some great benefits at every level of support. One of the cool things about being a Gold or Platinum member is you get to take part in our weekly live chats, Wednesday afternoons, 1:30 Eastern with Hot Airs at Morris and myself. Would love for you to be a part of that. But regardless, check it out at BarronArms.com/subscribe. Have a great rest of your Monday. We'll see you back here again tomorrow. Until then, be well, be safe, and be free.